Welcome to Evolving KM, a podcast where we discuss how knowledge management is progressing and the impact that's having on KM professionals. I'm Amy Monahan.
And I'm Gwen McAlpin. In each episode, we interview people who have either worked in or on the periphery of knowledge management. We get their perspective on how this profession is evolving to meet the shifting demands of legal service delivery. We hope you enjoy this episode.
We are with a group of students today from Michigan State University College of Law. We work together with them this semester on a unique collaboration. We're with the SEC compliance team, which we'll get into more in a couple of minutes. So do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, my name is Morgan Rogalke. I'm a 2L, and where I think the area I want to go into is FDA and compliance law, so food safety and things like that.
Great.
And I'm Eric Villanueva, also a second year law student, and my interests are in commercial law and business law.
And my name is Austin James, and I am a, I'm not sure L, because I was a 3L until yesterday's last exam, and my graduation's next week, but I've completed law school, and I'm just waiting for the certificate. And I am interested in selling legal services in Montana, and that kind of is a combination I've had of lien law and legal services that I can deliver while being the owner of my own life.
Great, and congratulations on finishing your last final. That's a pretty big hurdle.
Yeah, you are in a bit of an interesting gray area between, you know, law grad and law student. So that was an interesting description of where you're at. So
it's
Morgan, yeah. Well, wait until graduation day. That's a surreal feeling too, because you have the bar coming up. It's joy and terror at the same time. So Morgan, you're going to tell us a bit about the Legal R&D Center at Michigan State University and about the class that your team took this semester.
Yeah, so MSU has the Legal R&D program, which has some classes that are more technology-based and more on innovation. And I've just taken the one that I took this semester, the litigation and practice class. And there we just got a lot of exposure to how we can use technology in our career. And then also we got a lot of exposure to alternative career paths that use a lot of technology, which was very interesting. And it really opened my eyes to a lot of the possibilities. This program also allows many speakers. So we got a lot of exposure from different attorneys that use artificial intelligence and neurologic and all of those things we learned this semester in their practice day to day. And I found that to be one of the most helpful, interesting parts. That was a requirement of our class, but any student can come. So that's kind of what MSU Legal R&D offers.
And that was a mix of speakers from all different areas, right? Law firms, corporations, legal and non-legal, correct?
Yeah, it was a big variety of people. Some that were attorneys that ended up making their, you know, they left the legal field and they made their own business with innovations with artificial intelligence and bringing like legal services through like apps and things like that. So it was really interesting to kind of see what you could do with your career. It doesn't have to be the traditional path of like a prosecutor or defender.
Yeah, and I think, you know, mention the specific tools that you were exposed to this semester. So I know your team worked specifically with NeodaLogic to build an app, but you were also exposed to other tools as well.
Yeah, so we also were exposed to ThinkSmart, which was interesting. We had a little bit of exposure, so more of like NDAs and things like that, how law firms are currently using that. I think that was mainly just Neota and ThinkSmart. We also were taught a lot about lean thinking and the Kata approach of how to attack problems. So it was also like a project management class. So that was really interesting because no other law school class I've taken has any of that. It's all textbook. This class is not textbook.
And then
class
you also
is a challenge, that's for
exposure.
Sure. Go ahead,
you get
Austin.
Exposure to the products that the speakers bring too. Like Rocket Lawyer, for example, I had always heard of, but when we had the speaker that discussed how that was innovated up in the first place. I ended up learning about like Law Clerk, that is the website that is contracting legal services and things. And we were exposed to Kira through working with this project. And then as well, I set up my Avvo profile due to the fact that we had a guest speaker from Avvo in another legal R&D seminar that just went on during the lunch series. So I got a free lunch and plus got at least 7 out of 10 when I get my bar membership on the review rating. So you get all these wide variety from the consumer side to the attorney side, to, you know, with the wide variety of speakers. They also most of the time have something that they want to tell you about in terms of either a service or product as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really gives you a leg up going into your legal practice, just having that exposure to all of these different technologies and ways of thinking. And as you said, it's not just sort of book-based law. And there's a lot more to the practice of law than just the law itself.
Yeah.
So why did this class appeal to you? Why did you, it was a lot of work. It was a very different type of class. So why did you choose to undertake this?
Okay. Well, to be honest, the first reason I signed up for it was there was no exam. And it was labeled litigation. So I thought it'd be really interesting. But why I stayed in the class and didn't, drop the first week like a lot of students did was because I knew of the potential I could learn from it. I had never seen any of the stuff that we discussed. I had no background in technology. I kind of hated technology when I started the class. Now I'm a lot more open to it. And I just think it gives me a whole other perspective that most law students won't have coming out. And it's a great asset going forward. And I wouldn't mind, using it more in my future career. I'd love to bring it to other areas that it's not exposed to yet or it doesn't have as much exposure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. I would say I stayed in the class because there was a programming component. There was an opportunity to learn using Yoda logic. And so that was my main goal of getting out of it, was to practice actually having experience and knowledge of using and programming in an expert system to see what it could do. And it was pretty eye-opening.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, had you heard of Neota Logic prior to this class?
No.
Yeah. You saw it that first day and you were like, I have to stay and learn this.
Yeah, it was an exercise in patience.
Yes.
Well, that will definitely give you a leg up for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that for me, the reason I took this class, Professor Lina has an interesting story at MSU because he started in a variety of different departments. And one of his first classes teaching was teaching the professional responsibility portion for the MPRE. And we did a lot of how legal technology is changing a lot of the professional responsibility rules and just obligations of a lawyer. And from when you go into a class where you're learning professional responsibility aspects and you have someone who knows a lot about technology, it was kind of like a technology doomsday for a lot of students. Like, we're going to be taken over by robots and like, I'm not concerned with this right now. I just want to go back to studying criminal law or whatever. And at the time, his strategy was to make us read a lot of like law review articles or insider academic type of things from legal tech communities, case studies and whatnot. And when I started reading it, I kind of maybe just got this passive bit of knowledge that when I went back to rural Montana for my summer, I gained an additional appreciation that I didn't really realize I would get while I was in the class of how behind the traditional brick and mortar law firm is, particularly when there is less than 20 attorneys and it's in a rural area. And mm-hmm. I kind of had this weird epiphany of, holy crap, I might be able to just beat this wave of change. And it could be like almost a my little nitrous oxide turbo boost going into my legal career that will give me a leg up and being able to deliver. And so at that point I started looking for services and of course kind of just went into it with I would like to litigate, and the class is called litigation, and I know it's going to have technology components. And honestly, I thought that meant he was going to be talking about how to do
be a litigator on your laptop, and we would be doing a lot of word processing and document making and learning how to use a lot of text expanders and stuff. And all of that was mentioned in the class, but it was totally different than I expected. And I loved learning about that aspect of stuff. But I think each student that entered the class had probably a different reason for entering the class, mm-hmm. and probably had a different reason for staying after a week went by, because it is a lot to learn in 6 months.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And a couple of you mentioned that this was a litigation class, and the project that we worked on together actually was not litigation at all. You want to describe what the project was that you worked on with us?
Yeah, and I guess even prior to that, Professor Linna had us take a personality type test to assign our groups, and then also to figure out which project we would work on. And I'm not sure what part of my personality reflects securities regulations, but we ended up getting assigned a project together and assigned as a team to look at the 10K form and how securities lawyers look for compliance in filing that. It's an extremely long process. I will never forget that the longest securities form that was filed last year was the same length as Obamacare and the Dodd-Frank Act. And so going through all of these pages one by one is an extremely manual process. And we were looking at the app side of how to try to streamline that and make it more, you know, reduce human error and increase efficiency in the review process. And it was very interesting to learn both about the law and how the process could be improved, as well as working together as a group to achieve that.
Yeah, and this project was kind of near and dear to my heart because I used to practice securities law, and it's a very manual process with checking the regulations against the disclosures that public companies file. And so, you know, this project was really just looking for a way to streamline and automate that process in whatever way that you could. And we gave you guys pretty broad discretion. We kind of just gave you the problem and said, go figure out how to solve it. And you guys spent a lot of time with sort of process mapping and really understanding the process and how these, you know, how the process works now and how it could be streamlined, as well as working with NeotaLogic, which is a logical reasoning platform, to, you know, have kind of a question and answer automation to help walk a client through the required disclosures of a 10K. So it was a lot of detail work on both learning securities regulations, learning how to use NeotaLogic, and then learning all about process improvement and applying that to a real world situation.
Yeah, one of the beauties
in the end,
of this class.
It feels like we know what it takes.
Go ahead, Austin.
It feels like we know what it takes because we had to process map our process map and then maybe process map back to you.
That's very meta.
We I guess had somewhat familiar how to build things on Neota, or at least an introduction, and then we had a little bit of an introduction on the 10K side, but there is this huge gap between simplifying the law and putting it in to build the app. So we can, I guess, all attest firsthand to how hard it is to transfer, you know, transmit that language between the two of them. But they can, you know, it can work. It just takes a lot of breaking down on both sides
mm-hmm.
to make it happen.
Right, and that's a very specialized skill that, again, you know, your team and the other students that took this class have going into the legal field. That's a very specialized and now sought out skill to have, to be able to translate complex legal knowledge and logic into an accessible application for both attorneys and clients. And one of the beauties of this class that Gwen and I, you know, saw when we were first approached about this class is like, oh, we can throw really hard problems at these guys and just see what they come up with. And your team definitely excelled. This was we gave you an extremely hard problem to work on. And, you know, you came out with a really good application that we can now further develop. I think one of the things that Gwen and I both noticed and have talked about with your team is your team dynamic and how it seemed like you guys found a really efficient and effective way to work together pretty early on. So I'd like to hear your perspective about how you came together and were able to figure out your strengths and weaknesses and work out your dynamic as a team.
Okay. Well, the team dynamic, well, in the beginning, it was a scramble. And actually, now I think about it, in the end, it was also a scramble. The problem is that when we first began, we didn't know each other that well. And so even though we all know, you know, ourselves pretty well, we had to essentially learn where were the strengths and weaknesses of each member of the party. Like what could each member, what was their natural affinity, you know, where would they be most efficient in the project? And when we were beginning, we just didn't know any of that. And so we just sort of just assigned and did everything very haphazardly. But as time went on, as we started to become more familiar with each other, like where we were able to discern where strengths and weaknesses were, then it started falling into place. And I'd say essentially once we overcame the unknown and just got familiar with each other, we were able to work much more efficiently in the end. But yeah.
And that's a part of the projects is it's not just, you know, understanding the law, understanding the technology, understanding the process, but then when you get to the execution of it and how does this all work, you do have to kind of figure out how do you work as a project team to get this done. And that's another thing that I think, you know, you don't always have the opportunity to learn that in law school and is an important part of, you know, the real world. So I think it's really great you were able to kind of work through that. And it was very apparent to Amy and me that your team had really kind of figured out each other's strengths and weaknesses and how to kind of divide and conquer on this very difficult project.
Mm-hmm. One of the buzzwords in the legal industry for the past few years has been collaboration. But again, like Gwen said, collaboration is not necessarily a teachable skill. It's something that you excel at by practicing and then gaining exposure. And law firms are not always conducive to collaboration, right? Because attorneys, we hide in our offices and we work on client matters. So figuring out a way to come together and work on a project collaboratively where you are enhancing each other's strengths is a skill that we feel like this team mastered pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. There was also an additional hurdle we had to overcome, and that was we also didn't quite know how to tackle the project. So on top of learning one another, we had a hard time planning out who was going to do what, because we also didn't know what. So we made these process maps, but we didn't know what the actual work behind that entailed. So there was an additional hurdle. So it was just a very long process of self-discovery, really.
Yeah, and also the product in mind was the biggest thing. I remember it at some point in spring break when we were looking at it after we had been just kind of dividing things out and going from there. And I thought to myself, like, if we keep dividing it out equally, we're not going to have something to show. And we just need to basically figure out what needs to be done to deliver the product and then to start rolling on it, because some people are more effective. And I remember Eric was starting to get pretty good at working with Neota Logic. And at some point we were just having a casual discussion over the weekend or whatnot. And he had talked about playing a game that I knew was really technical and gaming on the weekend as his relaxation time. And he's also very good naturally with just computers.
And so I thought to myself, like, yeah, this is going to be the guy who's the neotologic person. And at another instant during the semester, I remember Morgan being like, have you seen the reading? And I'm like, we don't have reading due for like over a week. And she was like, yeah, but it is a lot. And I thought, okay, yeah, she's reading for a class like 10 days from now. She's the organized person. She's going to be the one that keeps everything tracked and keeps everything in line. And yeah, it just, they're just very different personality types, you know, by that. And a lot of the time, it's, you know, I've worked with a lot of business folks, and they're very good at, you know, I do social media, I don't build the website. You know, each thing is very, very unique. You know, I run the social media marketing strategy, but this guy designs the graphics. And they're not, even though they have some overlap, they're not trying to overlap on each other. And with group projects in law school, that doesn't really happen, because people are trying to shine for their own legal career. And so it may be more important to you know, make sure that they impress you guys rather than the overall product being impressive. But that kind of can look pretty poorly on the candidate themselves. So we just really focused on the product. And there were certainly times where there was anxiety within our group or anything like that, but we wanted to make sure that each time we were coming back to you guys, that what we were doing with the app itself was how our group was performing, and just united as a team in terms of delivering it each time we had to demonstrate.
Yeah,
it.
And I think that's a really good point, because, like, you know, our experience in knowledge management is that, you know, it just changes all the time, and the types of things that we need to do change all the time, and there's a lot to do, and it's easy to get sidetracked. And so, you know, we have to remain really focused on what our end goal is. And, you know, sometimes you have to, everybody's got to pitch in different ways. So it does kind of stretch your, kind of like this class project where everyone's got to kind of pitch in different ways. That's pretty reminiscent of the knowledge management field. So, I mean, with that, let me just ask you, had anyone ever heard of knowledge management before you took this class?
No.
Okay, that's fine. It's not a discipline that a lot of people have heard of outside of, you know, kind of our core group. Did you know that this, or kind of this combination of a lawyer technologist was a career path for you?
No, nope. not at all. It was very much a surprise that, like, even in law school, like, I would take a programming class, which I hadn't done since like high school. And wow, it was very eye-opening, I would say, like, just how similar it was, but also different, how there's this sort of now this interdisciplinary like push for lawyers, which I kind of went into law school thinking I wouldn't have to do. So that was a shock.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did and it didn't for me, because I had a friend that is an entrepreneur, and he had a hunting app idea that he wanted to work on. But he had a bunch of, you know, there's so many legal parts of it involved, and he reached out to me, and I thought to myself, wow, there's, with so many people trying to create these ventures, particularly seemingly attracted to live in Montana, then maybe there's a lot of opportunity to developing this portion, even though I had never had any experience on the back end. But this was definitely eye-opening in terms of how, like, Perkins, who he is delivering it as a legal service, especially to bigger clients, and it, a lot different than maybe just working on a team with someone starting an app, instead of like utilizing an app to deliver a service that's already delivered, but in a more friendly client-facing way.
Yeah, it's the whole legal services delivery model is really changing. It's changing pretty rapidly in the last few years. So are any of you interested in pursuing a career, or has this changed your thinking about your career path afterwards, of maybe going into some sort of legal technologist, innovations, knowledge management type role after law school?
I'm definitely more open to it. I haven't really decided exactly. It kind of will depend on how my summer internship goes. But I definitely feel better knowing there's a lot more opportunities out there than I realized. So if I, you know, if I don't like what I think I'm going to like this summer, then I definitely will go down that path. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the coolest things was that you guys were located in Portland and Ned was in Denver, and there, you know, we were all in different places, but our meetings were wonderful and very professional. It kind of made me realize that maybe there's not only work for clients that can be done afar, but also maybe part of my revenue model is to be able to do contract work with other attorneys working on things like this or other firms. And so, you know, having that as a portion was certainly, you know, because I can live in Montana and I can get to Denver on a $100 flight or to Seattle or to Boise. And the times I would actually need to be in the room with them compared to the time that we're working as, you know, somewhere else. The remote work aspect certainly new from the course of the project.
Yeah, and for the listeners, Ned was he's our subject matter expert for this project, Ned Pruthi. He's in the Perkins Coie Denver office. You know, the remote aspect of this team, that was something not altogether new for Gwen and I, but managing entire teams that were remote was something that was new, at least for me. You know, we did video conferences with each team every week, which we think was extremely helpful for, you know, first creating dynamic and maintaining that sort of rapport and accountability with each team. Again, another skill that you guys have a leg up on, especially how, you know, the world is moving towards a non-traditional office location setup. You know, a lot more workers are working remotely and even law firms are moving towards that. But to be able to maintain professionalism and organization is a big skill to have. And also communication, different methods of communications with your partners and your clients.
Totally, yeah. And the meetings were extremely well, and they were organized and awesome. You guys both did a great job. And
thank you.
I cannot imagine doing the amount of groups that you did. I don't know if you spaced the groups out like one per day or if it was like exhausting from having a ton on Wednesday or what.
Yeah,
I feel like we covered a
different
lot
days,
of information each week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was one day we had two groups, and then we had one group each day for the rest of the days. It's kind of a blur at this moment right now. It was a whirlwind semester. But again, you know, as KMers, we're used to being pulled in different directions and managing competing demands.
Thinking back on the class with kind of your takeaways from the class, you know, whether you choose to use this as inspiration for a future career path or otherwise, how do you think you're going to apply some of this, what you got out of this class, whether you're in a legal technology role or a more traditional practicing lawyer role?
I think I would just tell more, like I would bring it forward as ideas to areas that don't have it, just to kind of, because I'm a lot more open to it now, I would definitely be more willing to share my ideas and try to like bring it forward other places just to at least expose them to the potential, even if they decide they don't want to go for it, but at least so that more people are aware. Because I feel like a lot of, well, the areas that don't use it, I feel like aren't really aware of it as much as other areas, so.
Yeah.
A lot of what we do in knowledge management is, you know, bringing awareness to the changes in the legal industry to our firms and sometimes to our clients. So we sort of have our ears to the ground, especially through professional organizations like ILTA, as to what's going on, what new vendors are coming into these spaces, what are other firms doing, what are corporate organizations doing, what are they asking for, and then coming back and educating our own firm and our colleagues here about what's going on and what our potential is.
Yeah, the vendors part of it is still something I'm trying to wrap my mind around, because there is so much disruption in the industry that so many things are constantly coming up and changing, being innovated. both in the tools that we use on the legal side. And I had an update on my phone yesterday that said, like, will Evernote survive? And I was shocked because of course, you'd think that, like, the last time, you know, I was reading these, it was so many people don't understand how all these tools that are available that could be used. And now it's, now that, you know, even the tools themselves are being innovated to such a level.
Right.
So that's one thing that's really hard is, first, you have to open somebody to the idea of using different process management tools. And then you have to, when you're open to it, constantly keep learning and stay updated.
Yeah, and that is, you know, I know Amy mentioned ILTA, and I think we both found that that's been a good forum for us to keep up to date on things, but also, you know, the partnerships that you have and the relationships with some of the vendors and business partners in the industry. So I know in this class, you guys got the opportunity to hear from a number of people and to work directly with folks at Neota Logic, and that's a you know, it's been a really kind of collaborative process with folks on the technology side, with, you know, kind of understanding how their technology is intended to be used and giving them feedback on how we think it should be used. And so it's been kind of interesting. I mean, it's really become, I think, a more sort of interdependent ecosystem where we're all kind of learning from each other.
Yeah, and I should make a special shout out to the Neota Logic people, because Max and Kevin put several hours with us on their calendar, and you could, at least from my perspective, I think that Morgan and Eric would agree, you could tell that they really wanted us to succeed. They personalized it for sure, and even though it's, you know, we weren't directly paying them, or you know, they could be selling it to other customers or whatever. They really did want their product to have a rave review, and they very, very much so personalized their experience in building, which for me was great, because it meant that in the future, if there's something I don't know how to do, that I can reach out to maybe the vendor, and that those vendors are certainly interested in making solutions work.
Yeah, and I think
we're Neota Logic customers, and I can give them a shout out as well. They have a fantastic tool.
Yeah, but I think that does kind of show how it's like, you know, the experience that you had with them, with like needing to kind of, you know, they were helping you to understand how to use the product and the benefits, and you know, wanting to see you succeed. And it's like we have sort of a similar challenge, I think, on the knowledge management side, because our customers, our lawyers and our clients may not always understand right away how something is going to help them or how it's going to work for them. So that's a, you know, that's a big challenge for us. And it feels like we're kind of always in this communication or promotion cycle with trying to help people understand that these various, you know, tools and new approaches out there, how they can really help someone.
Right. And there's also, you know, that we're in constant dialogue with our vendors and giving them feedback, because we're hearing from, you know, their users, our attorneys or our clients, about things that they may not totally like about the tool or things that they would like to see, you know, in further development. So it's really, it's on knowledge management in that vendor relationship to have the constant dialogue to make sure that a particular vendor may be headed in the direction that our attorneys want to see them heading.
Oh, I was just, you know, kind of wrap it up with just asking you, now that you've had the opportunity to apply practical skills to a real life legal issue, and you know, having this experience behind you, what are kind of your views of the some of the challenges and opportunities that are facing the legal profession, particularly as we go through this period of intense change?
I think one of the things that one of the difficulties is getting everybody open to the idea, having the changes made, because the technology is going to change, or you know, like the world's changing regardless if they want to change. But I feel like some people or some attorneys are very reluctant to change. So I think that's one of the biggest hurdles, is just getting everybody just open to the idea of it, and then maybe, you know, using it. But and then just the change in the way they have to do like professional responsibility with safety with technology is a huge thing as well.
Yeah, I would say we're in a very we're like in an experimental age right now, where it's sort of the wild west, and everyone's just everyone's trying to get on the first wagon train west and stake their claim, and then we'll see probably in two decades where the cards fall and who has the big cattle ranches grabbing the Dodge City, or wow, I'm really milking this metaphor right now.
I like it.
I didn't intend for it to go that long. Anyway,
that's also very appropriate since Austin is in Montana, right?
Yes.
Indeed.
So I think
hopefully it'll be me, literally and figuratively.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think we're in this big, like, experimental age right now. And so maybe it's like we're probably in the age where people are most apprehensive because nothing has been really demonstrated success yet. And also we just really need to see like where consumers want to fall on these things. Like what will consumers pay for and what won't they and whatnot. And so it's sort of, I guess for a lot of people on the outside, especially as a law student, it's sort of terrifying since it's a force to be reckoned with, but we don't know how to reckon with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my two cents on that.
I think that's very perceptive. I like the experimental mm-hmm. age moniker.
Yeah, right.
My interest in where the field has changed, there was a very good discussion that occurred in our class, and I won't mention the firm or the speaker, but what we were discussing was the technology used to look through an NDA. And one of the reasons that the software can't completely do it better than the human is due to the fact that the law firms offer specialized language beyond just boilerplate for the specific reason of providing their clients. And there was some talk of, well, what if all of you big firms gave your standard information so that way these scanners could recognize that information? And the speaker was like, that'd be very benevolent and everything, but our concern is also for making sure that we can pay our attorneys and our bills, and you know, we do have to protect our work because that's part of our value. And so there is this little bit of aspect in terms of you know, the billable hour, what services may deplete revenue models, and what things smaller attorneys can use to actually make money and balance it with the efficiency. So as it changes, I think that there are certain things that give people a leg up, and I hope to be part of those, but there are other things that will just be really interesting to see how the pricing module adapts along with the knowledge adapting.
And these are issues that we talk about every day, you know, as we start to increase the efficiency and automation in legal, we're butting up against the billable hour model. And, mm-hmm. you know, how are we going to effectively change legal as a service to legal as a product and all the different conversations that go along with that?
All right.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for taking the time to talk with us today and to share some information about your class and your views on, you know, kind of the future of the future of law coupled with technology and process improvement, and where, you know, you as potential future legal technologists see the career pathways going. And that noise in the background is the wind in Michigan.
Yes,
the wind in Michigan.
Yeah. All right, well, stay safe, everybody, and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah,
all right.
thank you guys so much
for inviting us.
Yeah, we really enjoyed working with each of you this semester, and we wish you well in your future endeavors.
All right, likewise.